Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nyingar Trees podcast. Today I will summarize and review the book. The Unfettered Mind presents a set of influential Zen writings attributed to Takuan Soho, a 17th century Japanese Zen master known for advising warriors and political leaders. Often associated with correspondence to the famed swordsman Yagyu Munenori, the book explores how meditative insight can be applied in the heat of combat and, by extension, in the pressures of ordinary life. Rather than treating Zen as an abstract philosophy, these teachings focus on mental function, where attention goes, how it gets stuck, and how clarity can be sustained amid speed, threat, and uncertainty. The core idea is that the mind must remain free to respond, not trapped by fear, fixation, or self-consciousness. With brief, pointed lessons, the text connects spiritual practice with training, discipline, and ethical conduct. Readers encounter a view of mastery in which technical skill and inner freedom develop together, making the work a classic bridge between Zen and martial arts. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the meaning of an unfettered mind. A central theme is the difference between a mind that moves freely and a mind that becomes bound by fixation. The unfettered mind is not blankness or passivity. It is awareness that can shift instantly without snagging on any single object, thought, or emotion. In a duel, fixation might appear as staring at the opponent's sword tip, anticipating a favorite technique, or rehearsing a response. In everyday life, it can look like obsessing over an email, replaying an argument, or clinging to a desired outcome. The teaching reframes these habits as a loss of functional freedom. The mind stops flowing and begins to congeal. Takuan emphasizes that the problem is not perception itself, but attachment to what is perceived. When attention freezes, timing collapses and choices narrow. An unfettered mind can register everything yet remain unconfined, allowing action to arise appropriately. This perspective also challenges the tendency to equate control with tight mental grip. Instead of forcing calm through suppression, the aim is to cultivate a spacious awareness that includes fear and doubt without being driven by them. Freedom here is practical. It restores responsiveness, composure, and precision under pressure. Secondly, non-attachment and the flow of attention. The book develops non-attachment as a training in how attention moves. Non-attachment does not mean indifference or lack of commitment. It means not letting the mind lodge anywhere, even in what seems helpful, such as strategy, confidence, or particular posture. The instruction is paradoxical. You must be fully present and yet not stuck in presence. In martial terms, if attention settles on your own blade, you lose the opponent. If it settles on the opponent, you lose your own balance. If it settles on winning, you lose perception. The practical solution is a distributed awareness that takes in the whole field. This has obvious parallels outside combat. In conversation, fixation on being right can block listening. In performance, fixation on avoiding mistakes can create the very errors you fear. The text encourages a mind that touches each moment and moves on, like a mirror that reflects without holding. Such a mind can plan and still release the plan. It can feel emotion and still act wisely. The value is not mystical but behavioral, less hesitation, fewer compulsive reactions, and smoother transitions when conditions change. Over time, this approach trains adaptability, a skill as useful in leadership and parenting as it is in martial arts. Thirdly, skill, training, and the danger of overthinking. A recurring point is that true skill must operate without interference from excessive deliberation. When a person is learning, conscious thought is necessary. You analyze form, correct errors, and remember principles. But the book warns that clinging to analysis at the moment of action becomes a liability. In swordsmanship, a fraction of a second of mental commentary can be fatal. In modern settings, overthinking can stall decisions, degrade performance, and amplify anxiety. The teaching suggests that mastery involves moving from deliberate technique to embodied responsiveness. This does not discard discipline, it completes it. Training builds reliable patterns, and then the mind must stop micromanaging those patterns. The danger is turning principles into mental clutter, too many rules, too many self-checks, too much concern about how you appear. The remedy is to trust preparation and return to immediacy. The book implicitly outlines a cycle: practice diligently, internalize fundamentals, and then release them in action. That release is not laziness, but integration. Readers can apply this to public speaking, sports, or difficult conversations. Prepare thoughtfully, then step in without narrating every move. In this way, the mind becomes a clear channel for capability rather than an obstacle to it. Fourthly, fear, ego, and composure under threat. The writings address how fear and ego entangle the mind and distort perception. Under threat, attention narrows, the body tightens, and the mind searches for certainty. Ego adds a second layer: the need to preserve image, prove superiority, or avoid humiliation. Both forces invite fixation. Fear fixates on danger, ego fixates on status. The unfettered mind is presented as an alternative, a state that can acknowledge danger without being consumed by it, and can act without being driven by pride. This is not a denial of mortality or consequence. It is a training in composure that keeps awareness wide and behavior aligned with reality. The book also hints that ethical clarity supports mental clarity. If your motivation is tangled in aggression or vanity, the mind is easier to disrupt. If your purpose is grounded, you are less likely to be thrown off by provocation. For contemporary readers, the same dynamics play out in conflict at work, competitive environments, and personal relationships. When someone challenges you, ego wants to react quickly, and fear wants to retreat or lash out. The text encourages a middle path respond rather than react. That shift can preserve relationships, reduce regret, and improve judgment when stakes are high. Lastly, Zen practice is daily life application. Although the setting is martial, the book consistently points beyond the dojo. The mind that remains unfettered is useful whenever conditions change faster than thought. Zen practice is framed less as a special ritual, and more as a way of functioning, noticing where attention sticks, releasing it, and returning to a wider awareness. This can be cultivated in sitting meditation, but also in ordinary tasks like walking, writing, or handling conflict. The message is that spiritual insight is verified in action. If the mind is calm only in quiet rooms, it is incomplete. The ideal is steadiness amid noise and complexity. The text also emphasizes that clarity is not manufactured by force. You cannot wrestle the mind into freedom. Instead, you repeatedly see the moment of fixation and let it go. Over time, the release becomes more natural, and your responses become less self-centered and more appropriate to circumstances. Applied to modern life, this supports better concentration, less rumination, and more graceful recovery from mistakes. It also encourages a view of identity as flexible. When you are not trapped by the story of me, you can learn faster, apologize sooner, and adapt without defensiveness. The result is a practical spirituality that strengthens both performance and character. In conclusion, this book suits readers interested in Zen, martial arts, and performance under pressure, including athletes, executives, therapists, and creatives who want a sharper understanding of attention and composure. It is especially valuable for anyone who recognizes a pattern of freezing, overthinking, or becoming emotionally hijacked at the worst possible moment. The benefit is practical. It offers a compact mental model for catching fixation and restoring responsiveness. By shifting the goal from forcing control to maintaining freedom of mind, readers can reduce anxiety, improve decision-making, and stay present in conflict without losing clarity. Compared to many modern mindfulness books, its strength is directness and edge. The teachings are tested against high-stakes situations where vague calm is not enough and where mental habits show immediate consequences. It also stands apart from purely technique-driven martial manuals by highlighting the inner conditions that allow technique to function. The writing invites rereading because it works like training cues, short ideas that become more useful as you practice. If you want a timeless approach to mental freedom that connects spiritual insight with real-world action, this is a worthwhile purchase. If you would like to support Takuan Soho, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.